Bell Valley with his champions. Small armies massed on the borders, but never crossed. Occasionally, Nathan sent Fay or another champion out to chase away an army that grew too large. No battle ever occurred, as neither side wanted bloodshed, but it served as a reminder that open warfare could break out at any moment. Tanius had yet to open negotiations with either Leopold or Nathan. Not even Anna heard anything from him. Tanius was clearly bitter over his loss. As such, Leopold returned to the capital with Kiana. He took with him the political prisoners that Nathan had captured during the battles with the Federation. Those prisoners were the key to making this war favorable for the Empire. Without them, other nations might intervene and make this turn out exactly as it had in Nathan's timeline. Getting the Emperor himself to intervene was risky, but Nathan and Leopold saw no other choice. They needed to stop Tanius, and they needed to do it without causing the war to grow to involve other countries. Nathan strongly suspected that he had replaced one war, the war that he knew from his timeline, with a different war that he knew nothing about. So Nathan whiled away his time, preparing for future battles to come. He fortified Fort Tobram and Garrick Pass. He trained his champions. He learned more about the current timeline, and he enlarged his army, especially his Beastkin knights. Many of the Beastkin that fought against the Federation returned to Garrick Pass in the weeks following the Battle of Fort Tobram. They had been impressed by Nathan. If Nathan took them at face value, he might say that they wished to swear fealty to him and fight for him as knights. In truth, he suspected that most of them realized that he wouldn't send them to their deaths futilely. That made him a safe option for long-term employment. Being a Beastkin was harsh sometimes. Many of them grew up with stories of veterans being sent into the meat grinder. While the Battle of Nair's Tower had involved many Beastkin casualties, very few had been fatal. Comparatively, that made Nathan a highly capable commander. With so many Beastkin joining his side, Nathan finally had the chance to build up an army capable of fighting demons without the aid of champions. As much as he wished otherwise, Nathan couldn't be everywhere at once. There would be times that demons invaded one of his fortresses while he was absent. His champions needed soldiers capable of assisting them. That meant knights wielding enchanted weapons and armor, and who were trained to fend off ferocious demons. The Beastkin trained to be the first of those knights. Nathan created enough enchanted weapons and armor for the companies of Beastkin that joined him, and they trained under Fay and Sunstorm. Sen gave the other champions looks of jealousy, wishing that she had her own subordinates. Nathan hadn't found the opportunity to find many magic users, and knights weren't a great fit for a spellblade. That meant Sen remained a lone wolf for the foreseeable future. With so much to do, summer quickly passed. The weeks of fall began to pass by rapidly. One day, Vera opened the door to Nathan's office. She paused when she saw him reading a letter. He waved her in. "You have a door for your office now, I see," Vera said as she entered. "I found that although an open door policy works well, I received noise complaints," Nathan joked. Vera rolled her eyes. "I can't believe you didn't have a door to begin with. Your champions jump you at every opportunity they get. I'm surprised one isn't on top of you right now." "Faye's busy patrolling with some of the new Beastkin," Nathan said. "She's showing them around the ley lines. It helps if they know where they are, in case of an issue like last time." "Is that likely to happen again?" Vera asked with a grimace. "Somebody disrupting the ley lines in order to cause a demonic invasion?" Nathan considered for a moment whether to give a truthful answer. In his timeline, the tactic became almost commonplace in wars between nations. By that point, victory was what mattered the most. Allowing a few more demons into the world mattered less than defeating the enemy in the minds of most rulers, especially when so much of Domar was already controlled by demons. How could one or two more portals hurt? He had thought that things were better in the past. How naive of him. There are many reasons to know where the ley lines are, Nathan eventually said. Ley line disruption can be used to shut down the wireless, preventing us from communicating. If for any reason a binding stone is overloading with demonic energy, knowing the location of the ley lines is important when demonic portals appear on them. That can happen even without disruption. Vera scowled. While that's worrisome to hear, you didn't answer my question. And for good reason. So the answer is yes. Vera rolled her eyes. I'm beginning to realize that when you and Leopold are hiding something, it's because that something has a horrible answer. That's typically the case with most Bastion secrets. Nathan shrugged. He rolled up the letter he had been reading and placed it on the desk. Vera pointed at the letter. What's that about? Anything important? Not especially. Kiana asked me some questions about binding stones. Nathan waved in the air as if to signify how meaningless the letter was. Kiana? Isn't she in the capital? Vera grinned. Oh, I get it. She's being a good little girl and sending you a letter every day, telling you all about her amazing adventures and asking you about her homework. Must you? Nathan groaned. The girl adores you, so yes, I'll tease you endlessly. Especially given you already have 3 women crawling all over you any moment they get. 4, if you count the looks that Seraph gives you out of the corner of her eye, Vera said. Seraph doesn't give me any looks like that. Only exasperated ones when I take too long to review her paperwork. Vera shook her head, but dropped the topic. She wandered over to the window and looked outside. Nothing much was happening within the fortress, as most of the soldiers were out and about. The fortress had grown to accommodate the many migrants flocking to Garrick Pass. Merchants flowed through the pass itself, attracting people who wanted to make money from them. Nathan had lost count of how many times he'd expanded the fortress to accommodate them. Ideally, he wouldn't need to bother. He'd let them expand outside the walls. Right now, allowing that was dangerous. The distance between the frontier of the Empire and this fortress was still too small. Too many people might die if he didn't protect them with fortifications.
So, have you thought about your next move? Nathan asked, breaking the silence.
Well, there was a binding stone nearby. I thought that maybe I might finally become a bastion, but a certain somebody claimed it himself. What a greedy man. Vera gave Nathan a sidelong look, a cheeky smile on her face. Nathan didn't rise to her provocation and instead asked,
So you're still intent on becoming a bastion?
Vera let out a sigh. Ideally, yes, but I won't lie that I am rethinking the idea. The Empire won't accept me. Leopold knows what happened here. There's no way I'll ever become a bastion while he's in the Empire.
I wouldn't count him out just yet, Nathan said.
Even if he changes his mind, there are still no binding stones available.
There are plenty of binding stones available, just not nearby, Nathan corrected.
And that's the problem. I'm not sure I want to leave Garrick County. Vera sighed again and ran a hand through her long red locks. I grew up here, the next in a long line of sorcerers, all of whom have either used my tower or practiced sorcery nearby. Inheriting that tower meant everything to me once. Nathan waited, suspecting that she was building up to something. On the other hand, I'm not so sure I like chaining myself to the past like this, Vera said. I feel like I need a fresh start. A part of me wonders if that means abandoning my dream of becoming a bastion, at least for a little while.
A little while? Nathan asked. He didn't like the sound of that.
Vera shrugged and avoided his gaze. You helped me out of a difficult situation. No, let me be frank. I would be dead if it weren't for you. If not at the hands of Sunstorm, then at the hands of Leopold. Becoming a champion for a short while to repay my debt to you would be a pleasant distraction. Nathan closed his eyes and withheld a sigh.
He had worried that it would be something like this. It seemed that his warning about a champion being a one-way path hadn't gotten through. You said something much earlier, back when we spoke in your tower, about how you like me because I told you more Bastion secrets than others. So I'm going to tell you a secret that I really shouldn't. One that, should Leopold ever find out that I told you, could have me tried for heresy, Nathan explained. Vera stared at Nathan. She seemed frozen in place. You don't have to, let me. Nathan stared her down. Remember when I mentioned that becoming a champion was a one-way path? I meant it. Truly meant it. It's not a metaphor. Accepting any champion enhancement impairs your ability to become a Bastion. Permanently. Silence reigned. Nathan waited to see if she would say anything. She didn't, and merely stared at him in shock. Eventually, she gestured for him to continue. While a gem is a permanent change and can never be removed, even an enhancement limits your ability to become a Bastion, Nathan explained. The training enhancements in the Academy have a relatively minor effect, which is why champions can still back away at that point. But once a champion accepts a full enhancement, their potential as a Bastion is crippled. That sounds insane, Vera blurted out. Nathan kept his face impassive. There's a reason this is kept secret. There are a lot of implications to go along with it. The main one is that someone can be tricked or forced into accepting a champion enhancement, and therefore prevented from ever being an effective Bastion. Another is that many people may avoid becoming a champion if they knew that meant they could never become a Bastion in the future. It's that bad? Vera's eyes narrowed. Simply receiving an enhancement has such a powerful impact that they cannot become a Bastion? They can become a Bastion, but they'll never be a good one, or even a mediocre one. I'm doubtful that a former champion could even create a duo gem champion, Nathan said. The effect is that severe. Even if they could never create more than one or two duo gems, and never a trigem. Not to mention that their ability to manipulate the binding stone would be far inferior to a true Bastion. Vera looked up at the ceiling. Now I better understand why you and Leopold have cautioned Kiana so heavily about rushing into a decision about being a Bastion or a champion. She wants so dearly to fight for you. I thought that she would sneak off to the battle at my tower. I even kept a lookout for her, trying to sneak into any wagons or carts. Grimacing, Nathan looked away. He had conflicting thoughts about Kiana. He wanted her as his champion. He adored her. The two of them had been close in his timeline. But denying her the opportunity to become a fantastic Bastion, if that was what she wanted, was against his nature. She told me that tripe that you told her, or at least I thought it was tripe, Vera grimaced, about how someone can only be a great Bastion or a great champion. I suppose it's right. You can only be one or the other, because going down one path ruins you for the other. That's not what I meant, Nathan snapped. He sighed. But I suppose it can be interpreted that way. I want her to make the right decision, as it's not something she can rethink later. Even becoming a Bastion, then becoming a champion, is hard. Why? Does claiming a binding stone impact your ability to become a champion? Vera asked. Kind of. Binding stone connections are effectively permanent, so you can't become a champion later. More than that, a lot of the knowledge you learn while becoming a Bastion makes it difficult to be accepted as a champion. Nathan leaned back in his chair. Truthfully, a lot of what Leopold and I are teaching Kiana are things that champions usually never learn. In the end, champions were weapons. Nathan did his best to never forget that they were people. People that he was close to and cared for greatly. But to the nations that funded and trained the champions, they were powerful weapons. One didn't teach a sword the mysteries of the world. A sword didn't need to know the ins and outs of politics, or what the implications were if they killed the person in front of them. A sword's duty was to stab whatever its wielder required it to stab. Champions were the swords of nations, in a way that bastions could never be. A bastion wielded champions in the same way that a soldier wielded a sword. Seraph was dangerous because she was a sword that knew how to wield other swords, and she appeared to think and act of her own volition. To Nathan, that made her invaluable. To a nation, that made her terrifying. No wonder so few nations allowed champions such as her to exist. Nathan couldn't help but find it interesting that both Narime and Seraph came from the Federation. Tanya stood as a common link between the two. Did he favor champions that were more than simple, unthinking weapons? Nathan wondered what it meant that Leopold was willing to teach Kiana the same things, potentially leading her down the same path as Seraph. So, in the end, I cannot make a temporary choice. Vera let out a humorless laugh. I want to help you and repay my debt, but doing so costs me too much.
If it helps, I can teach you what little I can about bastions, Nathan offered. There are some things that I can't teach you, simply because the Academy has refused you, and I don't want Leopold to murder me. But I think I have some leeway with him to teach you a few things. And who knows, maybe there'll be a binding stone available later, when even Leopold can't refuse you.
Vera shot Nathan an appreciative smile. It faded the moment she thought he wasn't looking. After Vera left, Nathan glanced back down at the letter on the table. He felt conflicted, not just over Vera, but also Kiana and Seraph. For Kiana, the reason was simple. He knew Kiana as a champion. She might choose to become a bastion, and he might lose her. If he intervened and pushed her toward becoming a champion, he could make her his easily. But with Vera and Seraph, it became more complicated than that. His uncertainty was because he did not know them. His knowledge of the future did not include Seraph. Vera's recorded history in his timeline was completely wrong. Nathan reflected on these facts and realized that he had to handle these women the same way that he had handled things when he was younger. Not everything can be known, and not everything can be handled with a surefire plan. Metaphorically, he stepped into the unknown. Picking up a pen, he wrote a reply to Kiana. He sent the letter back to the capital, Alaik. Then he turned around and stared at the black door behind him. He had one last person to speak to. The two of them needed to have a very important conversation. Chapter 45.
So, did this turn out to be everything you dreamed it would be? Kadria asked.
I don't recall having the chance to dream before you sent me back in time. So, no, it hasn't.
Nathan sipped his tea. It didn't taste like anything he had ever drunk in his life. Part of it reminded him of the delicate teas that Narime sometimes served him. Those had been produced in her homeland, before it had been overrun by demons, and were an expensive delicacy. He sipped the tea again. It tasted sweet. Strangely so, despite having no sugar or honey added to it.
What have you done to this tea? Nathan asked.
Nothing. It's oolong tea. With mangoes. I'm almost certain that you can't get it here, but I figured you might enjoy it. Sweet things are rarer here than I'm used to. Kadria drained her cup, and it automatically refilled itself, the tea appearing from nowhere. Nathan had no idea what sort of tea she had described. He sincerely hoped he hadn't been poisoned. Looking around, he noticed that her void room had grown in size, substantially so. The bedroom was now more like a suite. Where it had previously been barely large enough to contain a bed, there was now space for a table and chairs. A doorway led off to what Nathan assumed to be a bathroom, although he hadn't investigated it. He didn't know why Kadria's void room had gotten larger. He suspected he didn't want to know. More importantly, some color had arrived in this otherwise lifeless void. The table and chairs appeared genuine and colorful against the black backdrop of this strange place. Nathan could see the grain of the wood, the threads that made up the upholstery of the chairs, and the golden straw color of his tea. Everything else within the room remained an outline. He found the juxtaposition jarring. For whatever reason, Kadria had chosen a table and chairs as the only colorful things in her room, presumably so that she and Nathan could sit at them and talk. Whatever food and drink she summoned here also contained color. "Do you prefer scones or tea cakes?" Kadria asked.
"Are those my only options?"
Kadria shrugged.
"I assumed that you might prefer something from your homeland, your actual homeland."
She smirked, and a plate full of fresh scones appeared on the table. Steam rose from the baked goods. Large dollops of butter, jam, and clotted cream accompanied them in separate bowls.
"I still don't understand how you're doing this," Nathan said, as he held a scone above his face.
It smelled real. The tea had tasted genuine as well. Food never felt, smelled, or tasted anything close to the real thing when created with magic. When a bastion made food using a binding stone, it was bad enough to drive a man insane over the course of the day. Appearances could be replicated, but nothing else. Magically produced food was all nutrition, no soul.
"If you paid attention to how I do things, maybe you could pick up a thing or two," Kadria commented, while smearing hunks of butter, jam, and cream over her scone.
Nathan quickly followed suit and tried not to stuff the thing into his mouth all at once. It tasted delicious.
"This is the same as your binding stone magic that affects living things, isn't it?"
Nathan asked.
"More or less. The difference is that food isn't strictly living, at least normally."
Kadria waved her scone around, sending crumbs flying into the void, where they became simple outlines.
"The binding stone is part of the world. Magic is just as much a part of the world as anything else, despite the name. People call it magic because they don't understand it."
"That's why we have magical science," Nathan said, "to better understand magic."
Kadria giggled.
"Magical science. Such a silly name. You realize the term is an oxymoron, don't you? Science describes how the world works, whereas magic is something that defies the way the world works. Your binding stones defy the natural laws of the world, at least according to normal science. In truth, reality is far more complex than it seems."
"So I've gathered," Nathan said dryly.
Kadria wolfed down her scone.
"Fine, then. You didn't have any dreams, but I know you had something in mind when I brought you to this world. How do you feel now that you've stopped the war? The Empire is safe. No demons are destroying it, and there is no massive wasteland stretching from the Garrick Mountains to the Kingdom of Falmir. Don't you feel like a hero?"
"Don't patronize me."
Nathan glared at her.
"I've stopped one war, but started another."
"But you did stop the war from your timeline," Kadria said.
"And was that all that you sent me back here to do? I thought you even admitted that you're working with me because you wanted to avoid the end of the world."
Nathan pushed.
"Perhaps,"
Kadria toyed with a butter knife. "The invasion of Garrick Pass was the catalyst in your timeline. When the Federation overwhelmed the Empire, it set off a chain of events that inevitably led to destruction of almost every nation on Domar."
"But can't that still happen?"
Nathan grimaced and drummed his fingers against the table. The sound echoed around the room.
"Like I said, I traded one war for another.
By invading the Empire, the Federation opened a hole that allowed the demons a foothold in the middle of Domar. But although I've stopped the Federation, now my only choice is to invade them in return. What happens if I tear open that same hole in the Federation? Won't the demons find a way through anyway? Finishing the last of the scones, Kadria dismissed the empty plate and the half-empty bowls. She continued to twirl the knife in her hands, as if she wanted something to keep her hands busy. "That is how cause and effect works," Kadria explained, not looking at Nathan. "You change something, and something else happens. How do you think the world would change if you were never born? Do you think it would be exactly the same? That someone else would spring up out of nowhere to do all the things that you did in your world?" "What if it was the same?" Nathan answered, a trace of bitterness in his voice. Kadria smirked and finally looked at Nathan. "Ah, I see what you are getting at. We call those predetermined events. They're rare, but some worlds have them. Or perhaps you might call them archetypes of worlds." Nathan didn't have the slightest idea what Kadria meant. Archetypes of worlds? What was she even talking about? He remained silent. Continuing, Kadria said, "A predetermined event is something that always happens in some form. Avoiding them is complex. A world may have a war that takes place. Originally, that war is caused by a particularly charismatic leader. But if you remove that leader from the equation, a war takes place because of a different leader, and between different countries. The war is different, the actors change, and even the ideologies and the reasons for the war are different. But the fact that a war happens remains constant." Kadria spread her hands wide and shook them in the air. "Predetermined events are spooky." She winked at Nathan. "So what you're saying is that the war between the Federation and the Empire is a predetermined event?" Nathan asked, trying to follow Kadria. "Not this war in particular," Kadria replied, looking at a time. "But there will always be a war around this time period. If the Federation and Empire can't start one, then there are plenty of other nations with bones to pick with an old enemy. I may even argue that you're better off with the devil you know than some unknown maniac that you don't." "That sounds absurd," Nathan said. "I did say that reality is far more complex than it seems." Kadria smiled. "Don't worry about it too much. What you should worry about are the wars taking place that you know nothing about." Nathan grimaced. This was exactly why he had come to meet Kadria. Beyond the problems he had with Seraph and Vera were the much larger problems plaguing him politically. The Empire waged war with two opponents, and neither war had happened in Nathan's timeline. The first was the war between Trafome and the Empire. Although the Empire had attacked Trafome in Nathan's timeline, the surprise attack by the Federation had ended hostilities on the Northern Front. The Empire had been destroyed practically overnight by the ensuing demonic invasion, rendering the war with Trafome a historical footnote. As a result, Nathan knew next to nothing about how things might play out. And, of course, there was this new war between the Empire and the Federation. Nathan had a better grasp of the actors here, as he now knew Leopold and had a history with Tanius. But what worried him was that this war was happening at all. "Trafome can take care of itself," Nathan said. "I don't have the time to worry about both wars." "You're just making excuses," Kadria teased. "What you're really looking for is a reason to go to Falmir, aren't you? Your old homeland." Nathan shrugged. There was no reason to lie here. "My goals here are twofold. Stop the demons from invading Domar, and to reunite with my former champions. If I'm at war with the Federation, then I may as well gather up those nearby. But Vala is in Falmir. I need to find an opportunity to get her back.
Is that it? Kadria asked.
She clearly suspected more. Truthfully, he had other reasons to go back. The coup that transformed the kingdom of Falmir into merely Falmir still stung. He knew that, given the opportunity, the conspirators would bring down the kingdom the first opportunity they had. Perhaps that was a predetermined event, like this war with the Federation seemed to be. Or maybe Nathan was getting ahead of himself. Kadria watched him, her eyes searching for something within his. He waved her off.
For now, I have only one real concern, and that is dealing with the Federation.
Oh, and here I thought your primary concern would be all the women crawling all over you.
Kadria giggled. Her foot crawled up his leg, her toes pressing into his calf. Higher and higher she crept, until her foot found a familiar location and pressed into his crotch.
Don't you appreciate having the opportunity to shape them to your whims? You can make them yours in a way that you never could before, Kadria cooed.
She massaged his length, and it slowly hardened under her attention.
I know that you enjoy their constant attention. Aren't they adorable, fighting over you like that?
He grabbed her leg and pushed it away. Kadria grinned and simply placed her foot back where it had been. He didn't bother trying to stop her this time, choosing to let her have her way. He had learned that if he pushed back against Kadria too much, she did one of two things. Fled, if he got the upper hand, or threw a tantrum and restricted his movement so that she had free rein over his body. Right now, he knew that she would do the latter if he annoyed her. He needed to wait until he had a chance to overpower her.
I am seeing new sides of them that I have never seen before, but they love me for who I am, not because I am manipulating them, Nathan said. Rather than shaping them, I'm strengthening them. You've proven to me that my champions need to be far greater than they were when I fought you. The path they walked down in my timeline may not have been the right ones. As risky as it is, I need to take them down new paths.
Kadria's eyebrow shot up. Curious. I had thought you would be more resistant to changing them. You seemed so keen to have their memories back, to have them restored to who and what they were in your world, pristine and whole. But it seems that you have come to terms with who and what they are now.
Her eyes seemed to glitter, and Nathan saw in them an emotion he struggled to describe.
He felt that he could describe this emotion were Kadria a normal person, but she was a messenger, and he wasn't stupid enough to attach human emotions to her.
No more food or drink seemed forthcoming, and he had his answers, so Nathan stood up. Kadria whined. He ignored her.
You are going to return soon, right? Kadria asked, a plaintive note in her voice.
Nathan glanced at her, raising an eyebrow.
You want me to visit you more often?
If you like, I can add color to the bed.
Kadria waved a hand at the bed while refusing to answer his question directly.
Nathan expected something to happen. Maybe for the bed to burst into bright colors, or another bed to melt into existence.
Nothing of the sort happened, and Nathan realized that Kadria had simply gestured in its direction.
Why do you think that matters to me? Nathan asked.
You humans tend to like having a better atmosphere for this sort of thing.
Kadria placed a hand in front of her mouth and moved it back and forth in an obscene gesture. Nathan rolled his eyes. So that's what she was interested in.
If you're thirsty, then I suppose I can make some time for you. Later.
Kadria grinned and clapped.
Fantastic. Oh, before I forget,
Remember that the twins will visit you sometime soonish.
Nathan paused as he walked toward the door.
The twins?
Who were the twins?
The name suddenly clicked.
You mean those messengers you warned me about?
He asked, turning to face Kadria again.
Kadria threw herself onto her bed, her hands wandering over her body in a blatant attempt to tempt Nathan into staying.
That's right. They've been asking me about you.
What?
It took every ounce of Nathan's will not to leap over and grab Kadria by the shoulders.
They know about our connection?
Kadria rolled her eyes.
Of course not. But they know that I'm here. Think of it like when you ask a bastion about another messenger. They're asking advice from a colleague. After all, they have an interest in you. Or maybe more like a crush. They want to look their best when they first meet you. First impressions are rather important. They don't want to ruin that first date with you.
Kadria giggled.
Nathan ran a hand over his face. He had forgotten about those messengers. Another headache for him to deal with while he handled the Federation. He slipped out of the door and into his office. Nobody was in here. Not that it mattered. For whatever reason, no one seemed to comment on his absence while he was in the void room or where he came from. Kadria's magic somehow prevented others from even noticing her mere existence. Night had fallen while Nathan had spoken with Kadria. He gazed out at the lamps that lined the battlements. The trees stood bare in the cold, dark night beyond the fortress. He resolved himself. He didn't know what would come. War was certain, but little else. What Nathan knew was that he would do anything to get back his former lovers. Narime was the closest that he knew of. No matter the cost, he planned to get her back, even if it meant he had to destroy the Federation.
This is the end of Book 1, but the story continues with Heretic Spellblade 2, Book 2 of the Heretic Spellblade series. Keep listening after the credits for a free preview. This has been a Podium Audio production. If you enjoyed this audiobook, we would love for you to rate and review it. For more heavenly harems and dastardly demons, check us out at podiumaudio.com and sign up for our newsletter. We promise we won't spam you. Also, consider joining our community of listeners, fans, and trolls on social media. We're active on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Reddit. We'd love to connect. You have been listening to Heretic Spellblade, Book 1 of Heretic Spellblade, produced by Troy Odie, written by Katie Robertson, performed by Stephanie Savannah. Text copyright 2020 by Katie Robertson. Production copyright 2021 by Podium Audio. All rights reserved. And now, a first look at Heretic Spellblade 2. Chapter 1. A vast hellscape lay before Nathan. It split into two separate valleys only a stone's throw from where he stood. The sky glowed a hazy red, and purple light shined from within the many cracks that stretched across the volcanic wasteland. Other than Nathan, only two other people were present, both women. The three of them stood on a wooden palisade at the far end of the valley. Behind them, a solid stone wall rose into the clouds. A double-door gate was the only visible exit from this strange world, and it remained closed for now.
"It wasn't like this when I patrolled last night," one of the women said.
Her name was Sen, and she hid her lithe-toned frame beneath a red cloak. Her brown hair held streaks of white, but her vivid red eyes were what drew most people's attention.
"So it split into two overnight," Nathan said.
Sen winced and looked away.
when you put it that way.
That's not what I meant, Nathan said. We're standing in a demonic portal. Anybody who says they understand how these worlds work is lying. They can change in an instant. This portal has been growing since we repelled the invasion in summer. Now the valley has split. That's important. Demonic portals dotted the world of Domar. They were a fact of life, and so were the demonic invasions they regularly caused. Nathan was a bastion. That meant his job was to keep the portals under control. Both women here were his champions, powerful warriors empowered with his magic that served him and helped him defeat the demons. As far as most people were concerned, bastions like Nathan knew everything about the portals and how to stop the demons. Reality was a touch more complicated.
I don't remember being taught anything about portals changing shape, the other woman said.
She was Yphela, better known as Faye. A bushy black cat's tail swished back and forth behind her, and a pair of cat ears twitched on her head. She wore the black and silver uniform of a champion of the Onfang Empire, including a gleaming black breastplate. In Faye's case, her breastplate lived up to its name. No amount of steel plate could hide her massive chest. Her figure was the opposite of Sen's in many ways, with curves where Sen was lithe. Nobody taught you anything because portals usually don't change shape, Nathan said. That was the problem. The world of a demonic portal was normally composed of two sections, the valley and the clearing. The clearing was a large open space where the rift to the demonic dimension opened during an invasion. The valley was the long descent to that clearing, with the exit to the world of Domar at the other end. Steep cliffs lined the sides of the world, preventing escape through any other means. In the simplest terms, Nathan's job was to stop the demons from getting from one end to the other. Months ago, he had done exactly that and stopped a demonic invasion. The wall he stood on was a remnant of that defense. But now the portal had changed into a different shape. It had two valleys, each of which joined connected to the clearing and the exit to the Domar. On the face of it, nothing had changed. The valleys came together far enough from the exit that Nathan could still defend a single location if he chose to. But the fact that there were two valleys was disquieting.
You haven't seen this before, have you?
Sen asked quietly, trying to prevent Faye from hearing. From the way Faye's ears pricked up, it was a futile effort. Faye was a cat beastkin and had excellent hearing among her other enhanced physical traits. I haven't, Nathan admitted, running a hand through his unkempt black hair. He hadn't cleaned up properly this morning, as Faye had dragged him out of bed in a rush after her morning patrol. The admission that he didn't know what was happening was more significant than it sounded. Most bastions oversaw only one or two portals and never saw anything significant in their lives. Furthermore, Nathan had only officially become a bastion less than a year ago. His real-world experience was low. On paper. Because Nathan was arguably one of the most experienced bastions on Domar right now. He had seen the collapse of nearly every nation on the continent, battled demons across almost every climate and in every situation. He had fought and defeated monsters who had slain legendary bastions and champions. Then Nathan had been defeated himself, only to be given the chance to go back in time and prevent the destruction of Domar. He had seen a timeline that nobody else knew about. That also meant he knew a lot more than he technically should. Sen knew the truth about Nathan's past. Her personality had been carried over from Nathan's timeline. But Faye didn't know the truth, hence why Sen tried to exclude the beastkin from the conversation. Faye continued to lean against the wooden spikes of the palisade. Her eyes were fixed on some point in the distance, but she remained alert. Sen glared at her fellow champion. It became evident that Faye wasn't going anywhere. This is bad, Nathan admitted,
giving up on the idea of keeping Faye out of the loop. She was his champion as well, so it didn't hurt for her to know what was coming.
How bad? Sen asked.
I think a messenger is coming.
What?
Sen blurted out.
What's a messenger?
Faye asked, turning her head toward the two of them. Pretending that they both asked the same question, Nathan explained,
Messengers are demonic generals. They are tremendously powerful and control magic that is only partially understood. Where we use magic that uses the natural elements such as fire and wind, they can manipulate space, time, and even the currents of magic.
Time? Faye mumbled. She shook her head and asked, How come I haven't learned anything about this? The Academy taught me about different types of demons, but I never learned about their generals.
Sen remained silent. She already knew about messengers, after all.
Because the idea of demons as powerful as bastions terrifies people, Nathan said. More powerful, even. They're the stuff of myth and legend. The worst of them are monsters capable of defeating tri-gem champions or destroying entire countries. At least one appeared when the Kurai Peninsula fell. By all accounts, they have the same power over demonic portals that bastions have over binding stones.
Or at least, that's what Nathan had believed. Recent occurrences made him doubt that wisdom.
That's why nobody talks about Kurai, Sen muttered.
Pretty much. It's easier to pretend that Kurai was corrupt and incompetent than admit that something more powerful invaded them than we're prepared for, Nathan said.
He looked out at the wasteland around him. The split valleys brought back memories he preferred not to dwell on. Memories of the last time he saw a demonic portal do things he had never seen before. His life had been turned upside down on that night. A messenger had emerged from a portal and destroyed his life's work, killed everybody he loved, and brought him back here. Nathan wasn't about to let history repeat itself. This new messenger wasn't going to defeat him. The three of them left the portal, exiting through the gate in the stone wall behind them. They found themselves in the Great Hall of Garrick Pass, Nathan's main fortress. Gray limestone walls surrounded them, broken up by gleaming statues, vivid rugs, and elaborate tapestries. The keep was lavishly decorated, and the upper level of the hall contained enough precious metals in its decorations to buy a whole other keep. Snow piled up against the windows, and ice coated the exterior of the glass. Not all the statues were inanimate, however. Beside the gate he had walked through were two imposing knights that turned to face him. Each stood nearly 3 meters tall and wielded halberds the size of a draft horse. There was nothing but air inside their armor, but the knights moved and glared at Nathan regardless. A moment later, they decided that he, Faye, and Sen weren't a threat and became still once again. These knights were some of Nathan's summons. He animated them using his magical power as a bastion, and they served as some of his most powerful warriors. Their armor was over an inch thick and imbued with magic. Even demons would struggle to harm them, and a single return blow could cleave through a dozen monsters in return. It was this same power that let Nathan decorate Garrick Pass with so much wealth. He could create whatever metals he wanted using magic. Although he had to be careful about selling too much of his fake gold and other creations, Nathan also used this power to keep his finances afloat, as did most bastions. Nasty letters tended to flow from nobles if a bastion crashed the precious metal market by selling too much, however. Nathan even knew of one bastion in his timeline that was executed for selling reproductions of extremely rare artwork. Only a couple of people wandered around the hall at this early hour. The lamps were still on, lit by magic, and no light streamed in through the windows. One of those present was a young wolf girl who saluted Nathan from a distance, her tail wagging violently. She wore the uniform of Faye's knights, and she was one of the beastkin he was training to be an elite warrior.
He saluted back. Moments later, the wolf girl's eyes widened, and she turned away to resume her patrol. Nathan spotted Faye making shooing motions and gave her a look.
"She can flirt with you when I think she's good enough," Faye said with a pout.
"Since when has a salute counted as flirting?" Nathan asked.
"Since she wagged her tail like a dog about to receive a treat."
Nathan left out the fact that the wolf girl was a dog, in a way. Beastkin weren't just humans with animal ears and tails, but also shared animalistic traits. Wolf beastkin were highly social animals and showed their emotions as openly as actual dogs. Besides, Faye wasn't much better. Nathan ruffled her hair, and her tail wagged back and forth in response. A moment later, she squawked and jumped away. Her eyes darted around the hall, looking for anybody watching them. She relaxed once she confirmed that nobody had seen them. Sen rolled her eyes at their antics.
"So, what are we doing about this messenger?"
"For one thing, we're not talking about it in the open." Nathan glared at Sen, who winced. "Otherwise, we have time to build up our response. It's winter, so we don't need to worry about war with the Federation. That means I can focus all my power on reinforcing the portal."
"Are we sure the Federation won't attack during winter? It's not that far from their borders, and we can't easily cross the Garrick Mountains," Sen said.
This was Nathan's other responsibility as Bastion. With the power at his disposal, he didn't merely fight off demons. He fought other nations. Until last summer, this fortress had marked the eastern border of the Anfeng Empire, which Nathan served. The Garrick Mountains separated the Anfeng Empire from the Amica Federation, and Garrick Pass was the southernmost land route through the mountains. While the Empire had been distracted, the Federation had invaded. Nathan fought them off and counterattacked. The result had been that he seized a significant portion of Federation territory on the eastern side of the mountain range. Part of that had included Fort Tobram, a Federation fortress. "The pass may be snowed in, but the Federation suspects that we have a way to cross anyway. We proved that when they attacked Vera's Tower," Nathan said. "Besides, winter is hell on logistics at the best of times. There's no food to forage, no crops being grown that armies can pillage, and many villages will be running lean over winter. That means you need to supply everything yourself when attacking." Nathan continued, "Even if the Federation is willing to do that, winter is still awful. Snow makes travel slower. Wagons get stuck. Animals become vulnerable to freezing weather, and a caravan of draft animals can be worth more than the supplies. And if it rains, everything grinds to a halt."
"So they'd be stupid to attack," Sen said.
"Nobody starts a campaign in winter. Even continuing one over winter is difficult. We're learning that up north." Nathan shook his head. The Empire was bogged down in a war with its northern neighbor, Trefome, which had carried on into winter.
"So we're spending the next couple of months preparing for the demons?" Faye asked.
"No, we're preparing for both war with the Federation and a demonic invasion," Nathan corrected. "Once winter ends, we need to be ready for both. But right now, we can focus everything on the demons, which means I can use the reserves in my binding stones." Both women nodded at Nathan. The sapphire implanted in Faye's collarbone glimmered in the light of the hall. Nathan was a Bastion, and the heart of a Bastion's power was their binding stone, or stones, in Nathan's case. He had captured a second when he had counterattacked the Federation. Reaching into his mind, Nathan found a monolithic entity lurking in the back of it. When he got close to it, it expanded out into a complex web of magical connections. Two nodes of magic stood out from the rest, and tethers linked them together in Nathan's mental world. Compared to Nathan's magical presence, each of these nodes eclipsed him by several orders of magnitude. These were binding stones, and each possessed magical power capable of altering reality. A glowing orb of stone hovered in the basement of Garrick Pass and represented the physical presence of the Binding Stone. But Nathan had bound the Binding Stone to his mind and could access its power at any time and from any place. The catch was that the farther away from a Binding Stone he was, the weaker the power became. Nobody knew how the Binding Stones had been created or what they did, but Nathan had been trained to control them using techniques passed down from bastions over millennia. Supposedly, the Watcher Omria, the goddess of the world, had taught the first bastions how to claim and use the Binding Stones. Nathan tapped into his Binding Stones and confirmed that they had a substantial reserve. Neither was close to full yet, but he hadn't used either one for some time. Both of his fortresses had magical generators that powered them, and those ran directly off the ley lines rather than the Binding Stones. Although Nathan used the Binding Stones as a backup, should the ley lines ever become unstable. Technically, the ley lines connected to the Binding Stones, but the power drain was minuscule. Every time Nathan cast a spell using the Binding Stone, he used enough energy to power the keep for a year. Altering the fabric of reality was horrendously inefficient. Returning to the real world, Nathan saw that no time had passed. While he was in his mental world, the Binding Stone slowed the passage of time. It often enabled him to strategize or think through plans that otherwise required more time than he had. "I'll use the Binding Stones to upgrade the defenses of the portal," Nathan said. "Although I don't know if we'll only defend the gate or each valley separately. Splitting our forces may be dangerous, but it's possible that allowing the enemy to combine their strength may be more dangerous." Although he wasn't admitting it to the girls, Nathan knew a little more about the threat than he let on. There was somebody he needed to meet with to confirm his theory with, however. Sen nodded, although she gave him a suspicious look.
"I'll contact Fort Tabram and have them check if anything is wrong with their portal. Faye, I'll increase the intensity of the training for the night,"
Faye chirped, pointedly ignoring Sen.
"Maybe I can get some new recruits, too. You can make more enchanted weapons if we find more night candidates, right?"
Nathan raised an eyebrow. "I won't say no to more qualified knights, but fighting demons is difficult. Any beastkin who isn't strong enough to handle it will die. There's a reason I've kept the numbers small."
"I have a different question," Sen said,
once she realized Faye was ignoring her.
"This is happening a lot faster than I expected. We've been here for less than a year. Why so quickly? Why here?"
Sen surely knew at least part of the answer to that. But to Nathan, it was Faye's reaction that interested him the most. No surprise appeared on her face. Instead, she glanced between Nathan and Sen with a look of faint curiosity, as if wondering if she would hear an answer at all. "Leopold did tell us that suppressing the last invasion so easily would have consequences," Nathan said. "And that invasion wasn't brought about by natural means in the first place. Things are awry." Awry didn't even begin to cover it. Nathan had to visit a special somebody to gain some answers. Sen and Faye might not be happy with his explanation, but it would suffice. After all, Nathan was about to battle a messenger he knew nothing about. His knowledge of his original timeline couldn't help him, and he had far fewer resources and champions than when he had fought messengers in his own timeline. Chapter 2. At the back of Nathan's office was a pitch-black door. He didn't know what it was made of or how it was built. He didn't even know how it had appeared there. What he did know was that it didn't reside on this plane of existence. Nobody other than him could see it, and everybody else saw and felt a solid wall in its place. If he drove a nail into the wall, dust puffed out from midair. His Binding Stone told him that the door wasn't even there. He pushed the door open and stepped into the white void that appeared beyond it. When the blinding light faded from his eyes, he found himself in a strange black space. A room and furniture were marked out around him in white outlines, but almost none of it held color or substance. Nathan felt as though he had stepped into a picture book that somebody had barely started drawing. A bed, a table, and a pair of chairs were the only items that appeared real to Nathan's eyes. They had color and texture. There was also a scantily clad woman reading a book on top of the bed, but Nathan pretended not to notice her. She dropped her book and focused her attention on him. The room had changed in the week since he had last been here. He felt a chill as he realized that the shift in the portal was likely related to the change here. For the past year, he had been denying the slow changes to this void room. What happened in here didn't affect him, and the introduction of color made his increasingly regular visits less unsettling. So wasn't that good? But he couldn't help but think that every change that occurred here related to either the demonic portals or the binding stones. When he had last been here, this place had appeared to be a large bedroom with an attached bathroom. But now it had countertops and strange objects lining one wall. It was hard for him to tell, given they were only outlines, but they reminded him of the magical appliances in modern kitchens. The kettles and stovetops were normally powered using enchantments.
"You like my new kitchen, I take it?" the woman asked.
Curiosity overwhelmed Nathan's desire to annoy her, and he answered her, "So it is a kitchen."
"What else would it be?"
"I don't know. I looked in your bathroom the other week and genuinely wondered whether I had fallen into another dimension," Nathan said.
"Yes, well, I find the technology of your world a little quaint," she said. "And by quaint, I mean that it's frankly bizarre. The anachronisms hurt my modern sensibilities."
Nathan rubbed the bridge of his nose. As with many conversations he had with her, they became confusing quickly. This delightful woman was Kadria. The four curly horns rising from her skull gave away her inhumanity. She was a messenger. The same messenger who had defeated him in his timeline and given him a second chance. He still didn't know what her angle was. He especially didn't know why she insisted on wearing so little clothing. The black cloth covering her chest and bottom barely qualified as underwear, and the only other things she wore were a number of platinum hoops and bangles on her thighs, hips, and arms. Her black hair had grown out since he first met her, and she now tied it back in a short ponytail. What hadn't changed was her bronzed skin, and the sheer amount of it she showed, along with her lithe figure, always drew his eye. Kadria smirked at him and ran a finger along a bare thigh.
"My, you haven't even had breakfast yet, and you're already looking for an excuse to exercise?"
He glared at her. "That's not why I'm here."
"I figured. You usually visit in the afternoon, when your champions are all too busy to keep you company," Kadria said. "Normally you have one at night, one in the morning, and can often squeeze some time in over lunch. But when they all wander off to their duties, you feel lonely and want some female companionship."
"By your explanation, I sleep with three women a day, so I don't think I need any more female companionship," Nathan said dryly.
"Oh, but I give you something they don't."
Kadria moved her hand in front of her mouth in an obscene motion, and Nathan's body reacted despite himself. She giggled, her eyes drawing lower on his body. He sighed and tried to ignore her provocations. It was too early in the morning to waste his stamina on her. Pulling up a seat, he plopped himself down at the table. She pouted in response, but scrambled off the bed and into the opposite chair. A pair of mugs appeared on top of it, along with a thick slice of cake. Naturally, only Kadria ate cake.
"You usually share the sweets," Nathan said.
"You'll spoil your breakfast. I know you haven't eaten yet," she replied. He idly wondered how she knew what he was always up to.
The mugs filled with coffee from the bottom up. The brew had a strong smell to it and was unlike anything he had ever drunk outside this room. Kadria had absolute power over this space and could create food and drink at will. Nathan lacked that power, as did any bastion. "This is normal coffee, isn't it?" he asked.
"Have I ever given you anything strange?" she replied, batting her eyes at him innocently.
"I'm pretty sure you gave me coffee with horseradish in it last week."
"Wasabi, actually."
"The green plant from the Kurai Peninsula?" Nathan asked, surprised to hear the name.
"Oh, you call it the same thing here?"
Kadria looked surprised. She muttered under her breath,
"Or maybe it's a translation thing."
"I can't imagine why you would add that to coffee," Nathan said.
"Because seeing your face was funny," Kadria giggled. "Even the memory makes me laugh. But no, this is normal coffee. Just, you know, better than what you drink."
The two of them drank in silence for close to a minute. Nathan dwelled on the mysteries of the demon opposite him. He didn't know what thoughts ran through Kadria's head.
No, that was a lie.
He had some idea, given her foot was crawling up his leg. "The portal has split into two valleys," Nathan said eventually.
"I suppose the twins are getting ready to invade," Kadria responded idly.
"So they are behind this?"
"I already told you to be ready for them," Kadria said. "And who else could modify the structure of a portal so drastically? I doubt this will be a full-fledged incursion. They're fairly powerful messengers, and this world isn't ready to summon two at once. But they seem rather impatient."
"Why are they showing their hands so readily?" Nathan asked. "Most messengers wait until the last moments before they attempt to invade. You gave me less than 24 hours to react."
"Because they're not here to ransack and pillage the world. They're here to play."
Kadria pointed a finger at him.
"Play with you, to be specific. You were an idiot when you stopped the last invasion and caught their eye. Now they want to take you out on a date, see a movie, maybe steal a kiss."
"I have no idea what you're saying," Nathan said.
"What the hell was a movie?"
Kadria rolled her eyes.
"They're going to have some fun with you, blow things up, and see if you're interesting enough to keep pursuing. I told you before that each messenger has their own objective. They're not the take-over-the-world type, more the collect-their-playmates type, I think."
"You think?" Nathan asked.
"I mean, I only talk to them. I don't live in their head. If I'm wrong and they try to blow your head off instead of blowing another part of your body, don't blame me."
Kadria grinned lewdly. Nathan settled down as her words sank in. His coffee had cooled down, but it tasted great all the same. Eventually, he said,
"That makes them sound a lot less dangerous than I expected, which improves my confidence."
"Oh, that's not the reaction you should have. They're still plenty dangerous," Kadria said, eyes wide.
"You just told me that they're not here to blow my head off, probably."
"Sure, but that doesn't mean they're not going to blow other heads off. You have a bunch of champions whose heads I suspect you'd prefer to be attached to their bodies, unless you have an interest in things that are a little too much, even for me."
Kadria raised an eyebrow.
"You don't, do you?"
"No."
He glared at her.
"Good. Also, we have something of a working partnership going here. We're trying to prevent this world from turning into a wasteland overrun by demons. It's rather hard for me to help you accomplish that if another messenger turns you into their plaything. So try not to lose," Kadria added.
"And there's the catch," Nathan muttered. "You're not going to help me deal with them at all, are you?"
In battle? Absolutely not. If our relationship is uncovered, everything will fall apart. Kadria grimaced. But I can tell you that you don't want to fight them together, and that I'm doubtful they'll attack anytime soon. Don't fight them together. Nathan noted that mentally. He would need to erect defenses in each valley then. Presumably, something bad would happen if the twins both reached the far end. Then he blinked, taking in Kadria's final comment. Why not? He asked. The sooner they attack, the less prepared I am. Because, as I said earlier, this world isn't ready for two messengers yet. By all rights, they shouldn't even be able to appear. It's odd that they're able to make a visible appearance. Kadria bit her lip. Something clicked in Nathan's mind. This has to do with the war, doesn't it? I had hoped that by bringing you here, I would push this world onto a new path, one free from interference. But that doesn't seem to have happened. Not yet. Kadria sighed. Your world collapsed under similar circumstances. A messenger broke in during a war between the Federation and the Empire and ruined everything. It happens a lot. This is about those predetermined events you mentioned. I don't really believe in the idea that the future is predictable, Nathan said. Kadria smiled faintly. Luckily for you, it's not. At least, not fully. You can control time, Nathan said incredulously. How can any future be predetermined if that's possible? Let's just say that your understanding of time and the way it works in practice are very far apart. Trust me, because I'm the interdimensional invader whose entire existence relies on knowing how this works, Kadria said. That doesn't inspire much trust. Hush, you, Kadria said. Then she smirked. In any case, you shouldn't be so worried about this situation. Being at war with the Federation is good for you, isn't it? After all, isn't there a certain someone that you desperately want to join you?
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.